American poets have a special place in the literary world, and a young St. Louis poet is finding her place there. Allison Rollins is a librarian at Nearings Hall High School. That's the day job. Otherwise, she's a published and award-winning poet. In 2016, she was a recipient of the national and prestigious Ruth Lilly and Deborah Sargent Rosenberg Poetry Fellowship from the Poetry Foundation. It carried with it a cash award of more than $25,000 to be used to further her writing. She was also a winner in the local James H. Nash Poetry Contest. And Allison Rollins joins me in studio. So nice to have you with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And congratulations. That's
Thank
a pretty
you.
Nice award and acknowledgement that you've gotten there.
It was. It was a hometown win, I consider it. It was nice to be validated in that sense as a budding artist in the community and to have that monetized support to continue to focus on my craft.
I don't want to get too personal, but how would you use that to further your creative juices?
One of the beauties of the fellowship is that there's not particularly any binding obligations in terms of how you spend the resources. So one thing that I did was I had the opportunity to participate in a poetry writing workshop sponsored by Callaloo. It's a journal. And I went actually to Oxford this past summer and studied for a week with young writers from all over the world. And I loved it. It was fascinating. It was a wonderful opportunity. So for travel, for the ability to join various organizations. And I'm working on currently my first manuscript, so to work towards a book.
Wow. You've got a full agenda ahead of you then. Allison, where do you hope this is going to take you? Do you want to retire from librarian's work and just write full time? Is that the agenda?
No, I am a diehard librarian. I think, especially being a young person, many people, when I tell them that I've pursued that particular career, it's often we're in the digital age. This is the age of technology. Everything's online. What is the use for librarians or a library space even? What does that mean? And I'm very committed to information access. So basically, the library has always served an important role in the community for storing, preserving what it is that we value as a culture and society, and also really offers resources to computers and internet access for the public. I think it really represents a shared economy where all people can come and gather information. So I'm very committed to my work in the library and see it as very much a part of who I am.
Congratulations
Thank
for that.
You. You know,
because we need librarians. We need to encourage people to read.
There's
no question about that. But, you know, one question I have for you as I can't say budding poet anymore because you've won the awards
That's
and you're
fair.
Obviously very, very busy. But it seems that to me that in the literary world, the smallest corner of that world is reserved for poets, that it's the novelists, if you will, and the screenwriters. Those are the people who really have the best chance to make a living at it.
Mm. Yes, there is the need to have a way to fund my life. And I think very much librarianship is a career that allows me to financially support myself, which is important. But I do also believe that I'm teaching, for example, this quarter, an advanced creative writing course at the high school where I work, Nearings. And I think that there's something important about fostering innovation and creativity and imagination. We were focusing this last class period on wonder and awe and what that means to different generations. And I think that we can emphasize STEM, for example, the sciences, engineering, mathematics, but there's also a need, in addition to literacy, for fostering creativity, for imagining or seeing the world in a way that it's never been seen before, and being able to articulate that in a way that touches all of us as human beings and touches our human experience. And I do think poetry has a unique way of doing that. So while it's not maybe as recognized as, yes, novels, I think it's important and valid.
What got you started?
I think actually as a high school student, I had a little journal and I would kind of do doodles or different things, especially during high stress periods. So during exam periods or times where I felt like I was not really in control of my destiny. I think a lot of teenagers, it's an anxiety-ridden period. It was a way for me to release and express myself. And it wasn't until later in my development going to college that I even read contemporary poets. Like you speak about, we are often inundated with what are the top selling novels, and you kind of forget like there are contemporary poets actually writing. Mm-hmm. And I became very immersed in taking workshops in undergrad and then graduate level courses and learning more about what contemporary writers were saying. And so just out of a love of then reading, I continued to become immersed in the art form.
How do you measure your growth? I mean, you've been doing it for a while. You're under 31 because I think you had to be under 31 to win that that prestigious award that you did. But you've been at it long enough. If you started as young as you just indicated, how have you been able to measure your own growth in this area?
Without being too philosophical, I'll speak to briefly, I was training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I...
Doesn't everybody?
Right? And I love it because as a sport or even an art, it's not... We're so... fixated on how do I measure growth, right? After 4 years of college, I get this degree, and that indicates that I have, you know, it validates the experience, and we're interested in those increments. And in a very philosophical way, in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's this notion that it's the process, like it's the being present in the moment and the process that is joyous and illuminating in and of itself, and not trying to become so fixated with measuring or monitoring the growth. So it's a little bit of a cop-out, but I'm able to say that I'm really invested in the process and learning. When I teach students, I'm learning just as much as I'm educating, and I'm just able to kind of let it flow and let it happen as organically as possible. I don't know quite how to measure it.
You've opened another door that we can't go through because of time constraints, but I'm curious as to what Brazilian jiu-jitsu is that's different than Japanese jiu-jitsu, for instance. But as I say, that's
another
time.
Okay.
What are your sources of inspiration?
I'm very drawn to surreal imagery, but I'm also drawn to capturing, I guess, the mundane or everyday experiences of life. I was recently in a conversation with someone. We were trying to discuss what would be a St. Louis aesthetic, or what does it mean to be a writer born and raised in St. Louis as a very interesting Midwestern city. I don't think anything is really topic-wise off limits to me. What I'm most captivated about is making language seem odd or strange, or pushing the boundaries of how we normatively would think about different experiences or different ways that even words are grammatically arranged on a page. It's very experimental and playful for me in that way.
What sorts of things in your St. Louis environment have you seen that have inspired you and caused you to write?
That's interesting. I think the human experience in terms of being a young woman of color very much influences my work. Going to Nearings Hall as an actual student, it was very immersed in this sense of empowerment and a commitment to social justice. I think we were very in tune to serving the community and being aware of those on the margins, those that are not included in the center and why that is, exploring and kind of pushing boundaries and pushing back what it means to be of service, what it means to give voice to those that are silenced. And I think I'm very often interested in those demographics, the people that we don't genuinely get to hear from.
You found some inspiration in the death of Michael Brown.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Talk about that.
Sure. At that time, I was actually working for the St. Louis Public Library at the Carpenter Branch, which is on South Grand. So I remember receiving emails at the time, you know, warnings about the potential for what was termed as rioting or the disruption of that community, the property. I witnessed the boarding up of the various stores along South Grand and then the beautiful murals that came after that. And so it was important, as much as it was, especially the Ferguson Library received a lot of public acclaim and celebration, to serve that community. What is it that people need? What resources do people need? How do we keep the doors open and serve the youth in this community, serve people that have nowhere else to go? And so I really felt strongly about the power of libraries as a social service space, especially in the wake of Michael Brown.
You know, a couple of things come to mind with what you've just said. One is the enormous amount of creativity that did develop from the Michael Brown incident in terms of the artwork, which you've mentioned. Books have been written about that.
Absolutely.
And also, we've done many programs on the Ferguson Library and the role that it played. It really kind of established a standard, I think, for what a library can be in a community, which is why I think it's so great that you're fixed on your librarian career. It's important. Yes. And becoming more so.
Yes.
Well, I want to hear some of your work. What have you brought along that you can read for us that we should be thinking about?
I brought a piece I wanted to share recently published in American Poetry Review that references Michael Brown. So I thought it would be a good segue. And then a second, if time permits, published recently in the Missouri Review. Okay, the first piece is called Elephants Born Without Tusks. The Washington Post says that green burials are on the rise as baby boomers plan for their future. Their graves marked with sprouting mushrooms, little kneecaps crawling up from the dirt skin, like Michael Brown decomposing into the concrete, ending as natural product of the environment. Elephants are now being born without tusks. Their genetics have studied the black market. DNA, a spiral ladder carefully carved from wooden teeth of founding fathers. Never let a chromosome speak for you. It will only tell a myth, an ode to the survival of the fittest. Peppered moths are used to teach natural selection. Their changes in color, an instance of evolution. Birds unable to see dark moths on soot-covered trees. The number of blacks always rising with industry. Life is the process of erosion, an inevitable wearing down of the enamel, the gums posing the threat of disease. On most websites, they suggest biodegrading, choosing a coffin made from pine or wicker. The man in the paper said, "I want to be part of a tree, be part of a flower, go back to being part of the earth." I imagine my mother then, her short cropped hair like freshly cut grass, immune to the pains of mowing. The natural burial guide for turning yourself into a forest sits waiting in my Amazon shopping cart. Pink salmon have now evolved to migrate earlier. I am familiar with this type of middle passage. A loved one watching you move on without a trace. The living inheriting an ocean of time. The sun rewiring the water-damaged insides. Cells desiring to go back from where they came. Certain strands of your kind now extinct.
Very nice. You hit a lot of buttons in that one, didn't you?
I tried to.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. What? Give me some sense of how that came to be, and what were you doing with that? Suddenly, the light went on and said, "This is what I've got to write."
Sure. Well, when I received the fellowship, I was finishing the last few courses in my Master of Library and Information Science, and as a poet in that program, I was so obsessed with the nostalgia that surrounds loss and what it means to have a VHS tape or a cassette tape that embodies your childhood or this experience, and then to generationally have that become obsolete. What does that mean? And how does that relate even to our bodies, that we are able to, for example, do a LASIK eye surgery to make corrections on the eye, but what are the limitations that the body are continuing to impose on us as time passes, and on certain bodies particularly? And so a lot of the work that I've been doing for this first book is concerned with preservation, deterioration, mostly because of my work in a library. Like, I control what stays on the shelf and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. And as you said, if poetry is a small corner of literature, what space is there on the shelf in the canon or in the human experience to continue to write and to have people read it?
I love the line of elephants being born without tusks and Michael Brown decomposing. Obviously, you're talking about him lying on the street for four hours or whatever that amount of time was.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
You've got another one. We've got a couple of minutes left. Give me some sense of what we're going to next.
Sure. This piece was walking my dog in U City and seeing a dead pigeon and the dog wanting to bite or eat or at least sniff that object and what that represented for me on that walk.
Mm-hmm. All right.
This piece is called Character Building. I watch the black ants line the rib cage of a baby bird fallen from its nest. The formation of their hyphenated bodies, a relief painting, an insinuation of ivory smiles. How can the dissonance be measured between the story that we tell ourselves and the one we come to believe? Christopher Columbus could stand an egg upright on a table, just as I can float on my belly or my back, depending on the company. Just say that the river turns and turn the river. For what it's worth, the value of an object requires a continual investment. The ants carry meaning on their backs, alphabetize themselves in a carcass of innocence. A little brown ghost chirps a stalwart moan. The imprint of the bird leaves the sketch of a musical score, the tune of unslinging a wing from the air. High notes hit when undressing the soft sky, a scaffold architecture of hope. Animals of little faith eat seeds from the feeders of gods. This world a setup for failure, the tragic flaw to go out on a limb, the irony the way the life will float up from the body like a toothless woman's mute whistle, a feather in the wind, a plume to save face when deflowered, for after you have grown into your success. Sometimes a bird tweets frantically, "Whatever happened to childhood? What exactly is the need for the hurry?" My dog licks the salt from my steeple legs. We continue our walk more briskly. We have learned through trial and error. Even our teeth still waiting for God to tell them what to do.
Proof once again that just about anything can be inspirational if it's in the right hands.
Yes.
I'm going to change course a little bit here. We just have a couple of minutes left, but I want to get your reaction to this because it's something that I've thought about.
Sure.
We talked about marketing poetry and the fact that it has that small corner of the literary world. It seems to me that the poets of this generation, certainly people like yourself, mm-hmm. but I think the people who are writing and doing rap are today's poets and will be looked upon as those who were the poets of our time. What do you think about that?
Sure. Last year I was at the Dodge Poetry Festival, and there was a panel on oral history, and it talked about from the griot to hip hop and how in which we trace historically a canon of spoken word or the oral presentation of rhythm and lyric and sound. And I very much think that is a part of that tradition. I'm interested in teaching my students to learn more about understanding the different ways in which oral expression can be a part of the written word. And I think a lot of times when I say I'm a poet, people think, is that a spoke? Are you a slam spoken word artist? You compete nationally. Like, those are very different sometimes things in terms of the traditional written word. But I think a lot of young people come and enter the world of poetry and are excited and invigorated by seeing it come to life on stage.
And a lot of what is being said, some of it we can discount, of course, like anything,
mm-hmm.
but some of it's pretty profound.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are you a fan?
Of hip hop?
Yeah.
Of course. Yes, yes. I like all types of music. I'm a classical enthusiast as well, jazz, etc. But sometimes also I think it gets back to what we consider of value or of certain taste. And I definitely think hip hop is an incredible form of expression.
We've only got a few seconds left, as I mentioned. When can we expect your book?
Hopefully in the next few years. It's still a ways off, but it's definitely in the works.
And it will include the kind of material that you've been reading for us today, or what else? How broad is it going to be in terms of subject matter?
Most definitely. These are the things that I've definitely been ruminating on, and as I mentioned, in terms of finishing my library science degree, and then hopefully ways to capture other interesting ways to look at life and truth.
Okay, well, we have a poet amongst us and an accomplished one already at the age of something under 31. Allison Rollins, thank you so much for being with us. Again, congratulations for all of your accomplishments so far, and we'll look forward to the book, and perhaps we can have you back then or sooner. That would be nice.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Allison Rollins. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.